Okay, the Maimer on Hilo Doidi V'Doidi Leaf from Alter Rebbe. Let's on page Chof Aleph. I know at the end one of the Chavarim mentioned that the last piece of the Torah, I remember, zipped through very quickly. I had a cheshit to finish this chelik, so it certainly needed a little bit more time. But and I'm sorry about that. Let's review it, the kitzer. Before we go on to the next section, let's review the kitzer, the summary of the third section of the Maimer on page Chof Aleph. Inyan Ha'aris Yud Gimel Midas Harachim in Mechadish Elul Hush Ani Tzaitza Lakish of Adam. The meaning of this illumination of the 13 Midas Harachim, particularly during the month of Elul, but whenever the Yud Gimel Midas Harachim are being accessed, is that the Nitzaitza Lakish of Adam, that spark of Hashem, that godliness within us that's called Yisrael or Sar Aleph Lamed. Aleph Lamed meaning, of course, the Midas HaChesed, the Sin Reish, meaning that ultimately is what controls a Jew, that ultimately is what rules over a Jew. Sar is a lashon of ruling, of control. Moiras Gamisha Rochok Me'id Melakus, that even a person who is very far from Elokus, from godliness, but especially during the time when there's a Ha'orah, there's a strong awakening of that spark of the 13 midas of that begins with Aleph Lamed. V'ubchinas Sada. This is the meaning of what the Rebbe said in his mashal of the king leaving the city and going out, and the people meeting the king in the field. V'ubchinas Sada. Those Jews who are called, who are on the level of field, v'afilu midbar. Even the Jews who are in that madrega of Midbar, who are spiritually desolate, as we spoke about Barichus, Shu Eretz Lo Zerua, a land that hasn't been sown, that hasn't been planted, meaning what? Shein Or HaKedusha Yochel Yashe Bo Mitzad Maisa V'Dibur V'Machshavos V'Shalol Hashem Heima. A Jew who's a field, certainly somebody who's on the level of a desert, is a person within whom there are the actions, the words, and the thoughts are not fertile for God's presence. God can't dwell. That person cannot have an indwelling of Hashem in his life because he is not fertile ground for Hashem's presence, because of the thoughts, the words, and the actions that disqualify him as a place or a person within whom the Shekhinah can dwell. That's what we see. That's what's in this person's life. And normally he's far away from Elokus, from Hashem. Shegam hu yoshev yizkar v'Elokus Baruch Hu. When, as a result of this ha'orah of the 13 midas, even such a person who's a sada, a field, or a midbar, can come back to Hashem. Amal ha'adam yitzidat tzarech levakesh ulechapes as an yitzotz Elokus bo. This is what the Rebbe is focusing on now, in this section and the next section of the Maimer, that there is a requirement that the person at least engages in some sort of a chipus, a bakosha, that he's seeking, he's trying to find that godliness within him, sheneva, that has been lost, aydei maisav harayim, as a result of his behavior. V'kameshikosav, as it says, v'kashtam yisham as Hashem lekech, and you shall seek from there Hashem your God. Ukshiya Rachmim Alanitsait Seloki Shahu Babchinas Golis Basaicha. And when the person feels an unbelievable deep sense of pity for that spark of God that is in Golis, that's in exile within him, he's able to come from that feeling of pity for the godliness within him that's so much in Golus, he could come to Ahavas Hashem, to love Hashem. And that's how the Rebbe explained the inyan of Yoshev al Hashem v'yirachameyu. Yoshev al Hashem v'yirachameyu, meaning that a person has rachmanis on Hashem within himself, who he has exiled. The person has exiled God within all of his destructive thoughts, words, and actions. V'yoshev al Hashem v'yirachameyu, is that a person has that rachmanis, and that spark of God that's within him, that's in a state of godless as a result of his, as a result of his behavior. And that's the deeper meaning of Yaakov asher pada es Avram. Yaakov is the midah of rachmanis, of pity, of compassion. Avram means one's ability to love Hashem. Yaakov redeems and saves. Yaakov is able to rescue that ability that we have to love Hashem from being totally lost and in exile. Yaakov means rachmanis. So when one has rachmanis, when one has tremendous pity and compassion upon the spark of Hashem that's exiled within him, then he's able to rescue that what? Avraham, the meaning, one's capacity, one's exiled, hidden and lost capacity to love God is then redeemed, is exiled, is redeemed from its exile, is taken out of exile, and one is able to experience for the first time, even many years in his entire life, a strong feeling of Ahavas Hashem, a love for Hashem. And this midah, this ability to love God, is something which is part of each and every one of us. Avram Avinu, Mogen Avram, Hashem shields that Avram within us. Avram is part of each and every one of us, that hidden love for God, which is the midah of Avram, which is our ability to be Moiser Nefesh, to give up our lives, to nullify our own lives, in order to be Moiser Nefesh for the sake of Hashem. Every single Jew has that hidden love for Hashem, that Avraham Avinu within him. It's just that Avraham Avinu was stuck. Avraham Avinu was in exile. The quality of Yaakov, which means Rachmanis, to have Rachmanis on Hashem within us, to have Rachmanis on Avraham Avinu who is in exile, through that midah of Yoshev al Hashem v'yirachameyu, through the midah of Rachmanis, a person is able to rescue the midah of Avram, which is Ahavas Hashem, from that's lost within himself, and to experience once again Ahavas Hashem. Paragraph V. So what happens if we can't do that either? Achadam Eshe Yifash Resh B'maisev Peich Chav Beis. A person makes an honest accounting of his life. He's mefashish from Isaac. He looks over the things that he's done, and he's honest about his mistakes. In machshav and dibur ma'aseh, he's not trying to fool himself. V'lo yisayir b'amidas rachmanis. He doesn't have this midah of Rachmanis that we just ended with the last section of the Maimon. He doesn't feel this great overwhelming pity on what? On the lost, I'm sorry, the lost spark of Avram, on the lost Ahavas Hashem, on the Elikus that's within exile. He doesn't have such Rachmanis. Lo yismar mer libo bekirbo, and his heart is not embittered by this. And he thinks in a deep way, is mamik b'machshavtoi. He thinks deeply about how is it that this spark of Hashem himself, this piece of godliness itself, of Hashem's bar kivyachal, has fallen into golus, besaych nafsho, in his own soul. And zos yosim elibo. The person should take this to heart. V'nisa alav hamashal hazeh. And to help the person who is so far that he doesn't feel any rachmanis, he doesn't feel any bitterness. So to help him feel some rachmanis, he says, here is this marshal. Ki hayayis teva ha'adam. The nature of a person is kishakoev lo afilu tziparin ragloi, that when a person has a pain in the nail of his, even in the nail of his foot, he has some problem with whatever, a hangnail. Mach mishenogaf be'evan. He banged into a wall or to a stone. Even though it happened all the way down by the bottom of his foot, it causes him to have even a headache, and the pain reaches his brain, and it hurts him. When does he feel that pain? Only if the toe is still attached to the body. If, however, that toe has already been amputated, then even though that toe, you know, that toe might be thrown against the wall, or stomped upon, or crushed with a car or a truck, it doesn't feel. It no longer feels anything, because it's not attached to the body. When they shall nichus v'nifad mishosha, the toe, once it's been amputated, once it's been cut off, the toe doesn't feel anymore that pain. So what the Tanya says here, if you think about this, all of you out there who have no rachmanis and can't cry over the machshavas diburim and maisim of the past and the exile of Hashem within you. So he said, try thinking about this. Kach anachnu bnei Yisrael. So too, us Jews. Michuborim udveikim b'yisborach. We're completely attached. That's how we came into the world. That's who we are. We're completely mechubor adovik b'yisborach. We're completely attached to Hashem Yisborach. Therefore, it's the most natural thing. The same way that the toe, when it's attached to the body, if you stub your toe, if you hurt your toe, you feel the pain all the way up in the head. That's as long as the toe is still attached, and even though it might be far away from the toe, there's still pain. So the natural metzius of a Jew is that he is attached to Hashem, and because of that attachment, he's able to feel the pain, the ke'ev ha'pagam shepagabnu. He's able to feel the pain that kivyochel he's caused himself and Hashem Yisborach. He's able to feel the damage that he's done to his own soul. V'hiradnu b'golus nitzaytza l'kus Yisborach, that we've dragged down into golus. Hashem kivyochel, a spark of Hashem himself. Ki ach v'pi shechote Yisrael hu. Even a Jew who has sinned is still a Jew. V'yesh lo b'chines nitzaytza l'kus anal. And because he still has a connection to God, if he's done an aveira, he's thought the wrong thing, or said the wrong thing, or does the wrong thing, he's done the wrong thing, he's still connected to God, and therefore he's still a lebedik, a Jew. He's still like the toe that's connected to the head, and he feels the pain of what he's done wrong. Okay, even though he sins, there is some distance between himself and that spark of God, because the spark of God within him is in Golus, but it still hurts him when he does an aveira. He still feels the pain and the bitterness of an aveira. Not only that, the Tanya says, despite the fact that the person has sinned, that godliness within him is still called the Tsar, it still rules over the essence of who he is. It's still the master and ruler over his essence. It's still the Tsar. Shubachinis Yisrael Hanal, which as we spoke about is the Tsar Aleph Lamed. Kenedoyma Mailas Tsar, Because you can't compare the mila, the level of a sar, of a great minister, of a great leader, of a great person who's imprisoned, who's trapped, lemailas a hedya, to a hedya, to a regular, plain, simple person who's trapped. Kiadayin nikar v'yadua maloso shel hasar. Even though this choshev, a noble person, is imprisoned, he still holds on to his nobility. There's still something different about him. There's still something special about him, as opposed to the peasant who is in jail. Ubetnua achas, and with one tnua, with one motion, yochel shi'ahafech min ha'hepech el ha'hepech legamrei lachzul kadmusa. In one moment, this sar, this chosh of a person, in one moment, can change from one opposite, from the opposite extreme of being in prison, of being far, far removed from the king, and in a second, he could go back and he could be standing next to the king. So how could it be that a Jew doesn't feel? If a Jew is a sar, if a Jew is a prince, well, he's an imprisoned prince, but if he's a prince, then he should be screaming out in pain. He should be crying out from pain, from his averus. So how could it be that a Jew doesn't feel that pain? It's because this person has done so much damage. That the person is mamish cut off from his root. It's like a toe that's been severed from the brain, from the body. The toe has been cut off. Once the toe is cut off, it doesn't feel any pain. So the Arizal said that if a Jew doesn't cry at all during Rosh Hashanah Kippur, says he truly doesn't cry at all, it's a very bad sign. And we have to think about these things, what that means. So he says it could be, the Tanya says, that the pgam, that the damage is so great, acha nifrid v'nichros mishorosh legamrei, he's totally cut off from his shorish. So the Rebbe now says that if a person thinks about this deeply, this person was having a hard time feeling any bitterness or crying at all about the mistakes of the past. Rabbi said, but if you think about this, if you think about this deeply, then it will awaken within you the deepest compassion, the greatest feeling of compassion for the Shechina, for the godliness within you, that sort of drifted away from your life. Even though you don't feel, we'll have to see what this means, we'll talk more about this. Even though you don't feel the rachmanis, you don't feel the pain within yourself of that separation. You don't feel that. But you could ask Hashem Yisbarach. You could ask Hashem Yisbarach. The reason that you don't feel it is because you're separated from Yisharis. But you could ask Hashem, Kama Shukasadim HaMa'achel, Amayim HaBarachamecha HaRabim Rachem Aleinu. Hashem, in your great... I don't feel the pain of my Averis. I don't feel the pain of my bad thoughts, of my words. But Rabbeinu Shalom, Barachamecha Harabim, you feel the pain of my separation from you, and you know how terrible and desperate my situation is. So therefore, Barachamecha Harabim, Rachem Aleinu, with your infinite compassion, Rachem Aleinu, have rachmanis on us. Perish from Neshanachnu, Ein Sechleinu Hadal Masa Gadol Rachmanis. Our feeble minds don't comprehend how great the Rachmanis is how great and how terrible the Rachmanis is as a result of our thoughts, words, and actions, how far we are from you, Hashem. Kimidas Rachmanis Midos Shel Yaakov Mavriach Min HaKotzeh LaKotzeh. Even though we don't understand the terrible Rachmanis of our situation, but the Midah of Hashem's Rachmim is infinite. And the Midah of Yaakov is Mavriach Min HaKotzeh LaKotzeh, that is that which was holding by the Mishkan from one end to the other Mishkan, that Mavriach HaTikon, that Tichon, that bar, that beam that held together the furthest extremes of the Mishkan. That's the Midah of Rachmim Hashem, of Hashem's Rachmanis. That means it reaches even such a person. Now let's read the Peirush. In this section, the Rebbe explains what should a person do if he doesn't feel Rachmanis. He himself doesn't feel the pain, the Rachmanis, on the spark of Hashem within him. How could you seek Hashem if it doesn't bother you? If his absence isn't hurting you, why should you look for him? How could you seek him if his absence isn't breaking your heart? A person that wants to have nice things and the parnas is not working out, so he feels sibrochen. So he goes looking, he goes talking to people about different jobs, different careers. He says bakosh is a chippus. But a person who lives lives in a cave and he's happy, he has what he wants, and it doesn't hurt him that he doesn't. It doesn't hurt him not to have a nice house. It doesn't hurt him not to have a wife and children, to have good food and to have a nice warm bed. It doesn't hurt him. So what's he going to have a bakosh? He's not looking. He's bechlal not looking. He's not asking. It doesn't hurt him. He's not missing those things from his life. He doesn't feel that it hurts him. So then how does one become uvikashta misham Hashem lekecha? How does one seek if one seems to be content or at least not bitter in his presence, take them? Why should one go b'chlal to look? What's he interested?
Right. It seems to me that can be at many different levels. Even
right.
In the relationship of Hashem, you are a certain relationship with Hashem, and He's there in parts of you, and in other parts, it's not shy of. It's just not there, and you don't even know that you come to shul in the morning, you're davening up a storm, and you're going to shir or whatever, and then. For the rest of the day, or in Shabbat, I don't know where, but there's nothing there. You're not even noticing that it's not there.
Right.
It seems that it can happen
right.
almost on any level.
Right. So the Rebbe is talking about a person who, at least occasionally, by davening or by something, experiences it. But there are people b'chlal don't have a feeling about
what's
it.
What's this?
Yeah, he's not talking about us. We're coming to learn it. Well, I shouldn't say that. He is talking about us because, to the degree that at least we're trying to learn, I mean, that's our bakasha, right? We're trying to understand, we're trying to learn, we're trying to come to something like this. But you're right, in the course of one day, a person goes through different varying degrees of closeness and of distance. But if you have a person in Bechlal, that comes to the month of Elul, that comes to the time of the Yud Gimel Amud Sarachman, this person Bechlal doesn't have a hergish of bitterness, of rachmanis on what he's done to the spark of God within him. So how to be mo'er such a person to be mevakish this if he doesn't feel that? He's a mechlal, doesn't feel it at all.
I'm not talking about an atheist.
No. An atheist, you know, there are really very, very few. Amongst our people, there are very, very few. Shlomo Kalber used to say that he said, I met an atheist. He's not just that he doesn't believe in God, he believes that there's no God. You know, he believes, like he's created a belief. So the emphasis is that this person believes there's a God. Except he has such a cold relationship with God that even though he's gone over in his mind and he's thought about all the things that he's done wrong, and he's honest about it, it doesn't break him apart and cause him to cry and feel a pity on that spark of God that's been so drowned in his filth. He doesn't feel that at all. But we're talking about a person who will call a prophet. Now, he's admitting that these are sinful things. He knows that there's a God and that he has to answer to God. It just doesn't get him to change or to feel anything, you know, any rachmanis on Hashem. But not an atheist. If there is such a thing, Bechlal, as a Jewish atheist, I'm not sure that there really is such a thing as a Jewish atheist. I don't really believe that there's such a thing. People say it, and over the years I've gotten to like 1,000 arguments with atheists, and then when it comes down to it, I told you once about my aunt Nancy Searle. She should be well, she's a very old woman. So she's like an avowed atheist, my aunt Nancy Searle. An avowed atheist. You know. And my father, I once told this to you last year, my father told me never to get into any discussions about religion with her. And that it's not my place, because I was a hot-headed kid, and how could it be that, you know, I wanted to argue with my aunt that she doesn't she doesn't keep Shabbos, doesn't do anything, and they come from such a wonderful hush of a family, my mother and all of the siblings. I mean, the ones only a couple of them survived, but how could it be? My father said, don't ever start, because my father once heard me starting to get into a religious discussion with my aunt, and my father pulled me over and said, stop it immediately. Don't talk to her about religion. Leave her alone. So you know, one day I didn't listen to my father, and I was sitting with my aunt, who I love very much. I went to see her last year in Eretz Yisrael. That was one of the main purposes of my trip, was to go see her in the nursing home. I love her very much. She's a very special woman. She volunteers until recently. Now it's hard for her to move. But every few minutes she was going to Tel HaShomer to volunteer in the hospital to help. She's an amazing person. Amazing. She was in Auschwitz with my mother and my other aunt, and she kept them alive, this sister, this atheist. So my mother told me that she wasn't religious before the war either. She went like she was religious, but she used to always say stuff like on the side. She was not really religious. But in those days you couldn't, you weren't, you know, you didn't have the luxury in that, you know, to go off the derech. It wasn't like now. You know, if something upsets somebody, then he just, you know, doesn't keep Shabbos the next week because he had a bad day or something. In that world, it was really, really very unusual where they were from in Munkach in that time for somebody to just take off. So my aunt wasn't religious really back then, although she kept Shabbos. She kept she dressed, you know, everything was up there. But really, really, she wasn't religious. So I once got into this discussion with her. What was my plan of action? Whatever I was then, I was maybe 12 years old or something. I was my plan of action to attack my aunt with her religious beliefs. So I talking to my mother, it came out in the conversation with my mother that her sister, because it bothered me a lot that you know, we couldn't eat in her house or anything. So it bothered me a lot, and I asked her. My mother said, you know that she fasts on Yom Kippur. So I said. So in my head, I said, wow, why is that? What is that? So when I was alone with my aunt, my parents went somewhere, so I saw her talking. She used to like to tell stories, and she's a wonderful person. So I said, you know, I started to get into this Indian, and I started to talk about Shabbos and things like that, and she started giving to me. She says, don't start, Moshe, don't start with me. Don't start up with me, I'm telling you right now. She says, let's just be friends, you know. She's like with the, and I said to her, is it true that you're fasting? I asked, is it true you're fasting Yom Kippur? We were getting like an argument about different things. She says, don't tell me. I saw the Holocaust. I saw what happened to all the religious Jews, done to my father and my mother and all of them, my brothers and sisters. Don't give me with religion. She gave me mom issues, but I kept on going. I said, how can you fast Yom Kippur if you don't believe in anything? She kept on saying, if there's a God, there's a God, then how come, this is your grandparents, she said to me, your grandparents are big tzaddikim, you never even met them, and if there's a God, then how come he let that happen, and all this stuff, you know. So I just said, how come you fast Yom Kippur, there's no God? And she sat back, and she got up, she looked around at me once, I'll never forget, and she says, what do you know? And she left. She said, what do you know? She said to me, and she left, I don't know. I regretted it afterwards. Like, you know, this is a bad thing. It was a bad thing I did. And I was just hoping she wouldn't tell my parents. And so, of course, you know, like an hour later, my parents came home. That was the end of that. Because my aunt was crying, and my mother ran to her, and they said, "What happened?" So she said that, you know, what happened. So my father took me for a walk. We were in Chulon. And it used to be right by there used to be a place there that was all sand. Now it's all buildings. There used to be, I remember that Sanchanim used to practice over there. It's Chulon. Big, yeah, now something called Sharet, right? Not Sharet or something, I don't know. But there used to be empty there. So my father took me for a walk. You know what he said to me? He didn't speak to him. He spoke to my mother about what happened. And I was worried my father's going to give it to him. My father said to me, this is how he began. He said, "What do you know?" The same words. He said, "What do you know?" He said, "You think you know something? I told you not to talk to her about it." He says, "You think it's because I was afraid that you would be influenced by her? That's not what I'm afraid of. You don't know anything." He said, "I told you not to talk to her about it, and you don't know anything." So then I said, "But Daddy, then how come she fasted Yom Kippur? She didn't answer me." So my father said, "She believes in God more than you." So she believes in God more than me. You know, I'm the chutzpah, the kid. She believes in God so much, then how come she says, "I keep Shabbos. I don't eat treif." So my father looked at me with such a look of disgust. "Hey, you little pisher. You keep Shabbos? What do you keep? What do you know?" "So you don't know anything." See, he said it. "You don't know anything." My father said, "Her fasting Yom Kippur is more than all your Shabbos is. Her fasting Yom Kippur is more than all your tefillins." That's what he said. He said, "She believes in God." I said, "She said that she doesn't believe in God." My father said, "She believes in God. She's very broken and hurt," my father explained to me. "And she has a hard time with God. She's in the middle of a fight with God. But she believes in God." And don't you think when I was there this last year we got into an argument?
Yeah.
And I went back to see. I went with my wife and I took two of the girls. I was there with Chumi and with Meir. We went a special trip over there. She's now in a place right outside, right a little bit from Tel Shomer. This is like an old age, very beautiful place. It's such a wonderful time seeing what a special person. So she was asking, like, you know, she said, she hadn't seen me in a while. She said to me, your beard is getting gray. So I said, "I'm getting old." She says, "You don't need to cut it off." So I said, I smiled and I said, we call it Kuka. Her name is Rus. I said, "Kuka," I said, don't start with me on religion. She said, "I like what we had a long time ago. It's okay." We were laughing and crying together. It was a very emotional thing. She said, "She says, forget it." It's like, you know, what am I going to do? It turns out that she lights Shabbos candles. We found out those. So she says, "God, what am I going to do? You know, you try to fight against God, and in the end, he wins. You try to fight with him, and he wins anyway." That's what she said. "What am I going to do? To fight against him?" So she said, "For the last 50 years, I'm screaming and fighting, and I eat treif, I machal Shabbos, you know. I did whatever I could to scream and yell. In the end, what am I going to do?" So she has a little candles, and she lights Shabbos candles.
God has infinite patience.
In the end, God wins, that's what she says. "Hu nitzach oti." He beat me. That was good. What's a yid? Huh?
Actually, she's winning.
Yeah, she is. I mean, you know, I don't think she really keeps much else. I don't know what else she does, but that was, for me, it was kedai, the trip to Eretz Yisrael. Not for me, that was more than the Kaisel and the Maros Machpel and Kever Rochel. That little thing with my aunt, my daughters don't know what happened over there. You know, it's still been explained to them. But I know I told them that she's not religious or anything. But. So what do you think it's forcing her? This person that she gave every free minute of her life was to help sick Jews. Every free minute, any time she had a second, she was going to hospitals to helping people. And, well, that's not that lukus. That's what it is. But so you, I guess what that's basically what it is. Like, what do we know, right? So what does a person, if a person doesn't feel anything? It doesn't feel any rachmanis. So then how does one become a mevakesh at all? How does one become a mevakesh? So, Moshe, that's as far as Jewish atheists are concerned. That was my answer to, about Jewish atheists. I have a hard time, especially since visiting my aunt, I have a hard time believing anymore in atheists. So personally, he says, "Achadam ashiyafashish b'maisav liyisayru b'midas achmanis." A person is mafashish b'maisav, and he doesn't feel any rachmanis. Liyismarmer libo bekibro, and he doesn't feel any bitterness within his heart, meaning sadness and brokenness. Even though he's trying to think deeply. He's thinking deeply about all of his avarice and all the things he's done that are wrong, and he's learned the first part of the Ma'amar, and he knows that as a result of all of his things, he's thrown Hashem's Baruch within him into a state of terrible galus. He knows that, and he's thinking about it, but it doesn't do anything. Zayis Yosem Alibav Anisolav Hamashal Hazeh. Then let him take this to heart, what I'm going to say now. I'm going to use a moshel, but let the person think about this moshel and let him take it to heart. Let's understand, this person who doesn't feel anything has to understand why he doesn't feel anything. And if he understands why he doesn't feel anything, he'll begin to feel something. Madu eno margish. Why doesn't he feel like anything? Vahayim. So he says that the teva of a person is kishakarev la'afil yitziparin ragli, even if he hurts, he bangs his nail. Machmash shenagav bevi, he smears into a stone, into a wall. Magish akev v'meichem mitzdair, it hurts him, it goes all the way up to his head. The mamish, that pain reaches all the way up to the brain, because that's how we feel pain. A toe, stam a toe doesn't feel any pain, just because it's connected with all that stuff in biology books, all those pictures and things. It's connected to all the way up to the brain. So the nail, there's a feeling of pain. But if it's cut, if the toe is no longer attached to the body, then the mind doesn't feel the pain. I feel it, so he explains. I feel it's iparan haregel. She'ein bo chiyus, kamo evari haguf. Even if you take the little nail, now the toenail, nails don't really feel much compared to the rest of the body. The nail is the toughest part of a person. That's why they say by the umasalim, they say he's tough as nails. I think that means metal nails. But the truth is that even the nail of a person doesn't feel much. So if you take a pin and you stick it into your toe, that hurts. But if you stick it to your and you put it in the nail, now it doesn't. You barely feel something like dull touching your nail. The nail is tough, just like the hair. The hair doesn't feel much. Doesn't feel much pain, right? And the nails don't feel much. Don't feel really anything. Only the it's because it's attached to the finger. So if you give it a good enough smash, but the nail itself is hard. And nevertheless, if you smash your nail. I don't know if that ever happened to you. You're going and walking there in the dark and you give a good clap against something, right? And there's nobody there and you think your mamish, it's the end of your life. That split second when you smash your foot against the wall and you just go, whoa, 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 whoa. You don't know what to do, right? So your nail could be saying, I'm in a lot of pain. You wonder, how could that be? The nail is such a tough thing. It's hard. It's still attached. And because it's still attached to your toe, and the toe is attached to the foot, and the foot's attached as per the niggun that we used to sing when we were kids. So the whole thing is one big thing, and because of that, it hurts. It goes all the way up to your brain, and that's where you feel the pain. So he says, I feel it's iparna regal she'en bochiyus. A nail is not even alive. I mean, of course, we know now scientifically it has stuff going on in it, but a nail compared to the rest of the body is not alive. It's not a lebedic part of the body. That's why a person cuts it. No, it's not lebedic. It doesn't hurt when you cut off the nail. But if it's still attached to the body, it's like when you're cutting the nail and you went a little bit too far. when you're cutting the nail, not the part that's growing, but you get a little bit down deep, that hurts plenty. Right? It's like part of a person that's like a plant. Like the hair, the toe, the nails. It just grows like a plant. The hair and the nails, they just grow. Mikol makom hayosvu mechuba leguf. Nevertheless, as long as it's attached to the body, how are you kosher lenefesh v'chiyus aguf? Once it's attached to the body, that means it has a kesher to what? To the nefesh, because the physical body is controlled by that part of it that's called the nefesh. That means that if the nail is still attached to the body, it still has a shaykhis, it still has a connection to the nefesh. V'chiyus aguf, and it's the nefesh enlivens the body. So if it's still attached to the body, it's still attached to the nefesh. V'lachein margish hamoyach ha-ke'ev shebetziporin. And therefore, the brain is still, even though the nail is this funny little thing, but the brain still feels what? The brain still feels the ke'ev, the pain of that nail. V'heder agoshes ha-ke'ev. And if there is no pain at all, if there is no pain when that nail is hitting something, it's a proof that the nail is no longer attached to the body. And that's why then if the nail is smashed, or even if the nail is like just dangling, at that point it doesn't feel anything, right? Or when you have a tooth and the tooth is just dangling. But if the tooth is still connected and you start to fiddle with it, I mean, I don't know about you, in my house, I'm the one that takes out I'm the dentist in my house. So, you know, the kid, as soon as it's a little bit loose, they get all excited. You know, Daddy, you can take out my tooth. And I say, oh, you don't want me to do that. It's just moving a little bit. And then, you know, every day, the kid comes over, what about now? And I don't know. Until finally, you know, when it's momish, you know, good. And even then, you have to do it very quickly, but even then, there's a tiny connection, so it's a drop, maybe a little bit of a. But if there's no attachment at all, then you could take the tooth and you could smash 10 million pieces. It doesn't feel like, even when it's hardly connected, it doesn't feel much. But when it's really connected, it's unbearable to fiddle with it. So that means ein lechibur m'sharshav no longer has an attachment to its root. Kach anachnu b'nei Yisrael. The natural healthy state of a Jew is that he's completely securely attached to Hashem as Therefore, when things are the way they're supposed to be, any time that you or I would have a thought that's not proper, we would feel like the tzaddik feels. The tzaddik has even the slightest thing. He didn't even mull over the thought. If there was something that just passed by his line of vision, the tzaddik feels terrible, terrible anguish. And a person in a healthy Jew would feel certainly the pain from any machshav, a thought, word, or action that wasn't the way it was supposed to be. That's why the Gemara says that if you see that the tzaddik that did something wrong, you could be certain that he did tshuva. It happens, a person's not perfect, so even the tzaddik might have done something wrong, but there's no question that he didn't let go of that he was eating his kishkas out because of that. He was broken about that, it wasn't stam.
If we could, or we would allow ourselves then to feel, we're all connected in the core by the Ruach Shalom, all the Neshamas are connected, so another person's pain of something happening here is as well. You could lose your mind. Because if you are connected over everything that's happening to other Jews, or if you see a Jew that's so disconnected, or how, I mean, you almost want to turn it off, because otherwise you go crazy.
No, you have to be strong. You don't see so many Jews going crazy like that. You see, but tzaddikim, Tzaddikim have big karikas. Other Jews, they have a natural way, a natural defense mechanism of sort of shutting down, so they should be able to. Like when we hear terrible, terrible news from Eretz Yisrael, we don't know what to do. You don't know. Like sometimes, you know, when I hear something, God forbid, on the radio, I just like it. You know, I don't know. I keep on listening to the radio in the morning. I know I should stop by this time, just put on the other thing that just goes beep, beep, beep. But I still turn on the news. It's like that's a bad habit. But anyway, you know, because I'm worried, I want to hear, you know. But it's anyway. So you know, when you hear something like that, so I just lie there, you know, and it's they don't want to get up. You just feel like just staying. You say, I don't want to get up. You don't know how you're going to get up, but then you do. We have in us kaiches. It's not so much a pella on us; it's a pella on a tzaddik who feels infinite pain over every single morsel of Jewish suffering. And despite that, the tzaddik is able to go on. I was reading a maisa last night about the Lubavitch Rebbe, it's like this woman who used to be not religious wrote an article about what happened with her with Lubavitch Rebbe. I can't get out of my head. It's a whole long thing. It was like 5 pages long in Lashon HaKodesh in Hebrew. This woman with the baby that was sick. She went to the Rebbe, and what happened there with the Rebbe, that so she just went to get, you know, when the Rebbe was giving out dollars. And the doctor wanted to operate on the baby. And she first came into the doctor. When she first came into the Rebbe, she was outside the doctor's. She just got this terrible report about the baby. The baby had been, there were things throwing up and high fever or something. In the end they found that the baby was screaming in pain. It turns out that this baby never had a terrible growth, a cancerous growth in the brain. The baby was a little baby, like 2-3 months, had a big growth in the brain. So doctors made a whole, they had a very chosh of the doctors to operate. And when she was coming out, she was sitting down in the, like, you know, after this meeting, she was sitting with the baby just crying. And there was a Lubavitcher girl that was in the hospital just visiting someone, and went over to her and said, "What are you crying about?" So she said, you know, with my baby. So this girl said, this is a maisa from many years ago. The girl said, "Why don't you come with me to the Lubavitcher Rebbe?" So this lady wasn't religious. She says, "Well, I don't go to Rebbe's." But the girl kept on calling. She took a number. The girl called her like every day. So finally, it was Sunday. The Rebbe used to give out. So she went. And she didn't go with the baby. She just went like this. And she came to the Rebbe, and she couldn't really even speak. She saw the Rebbe's eyes. It was like a whole thing. She couldn't even speak. And the Rebbe gave her a big smile and gave her a dollar. And then the Rebbe gave her, said, "Here's another dollar for your baby, that the baby should have a refuah shleima." Just like this. But the baby should have a refuah. And then there was a whole story about how she went back a few times to the Rebbe, and the doctors wanted to operate. And she went to the Rebbe and she says, I don't want to operate at all. So I don't want to operate. That's what the woman said. And the Rebbe smiled and gave her $8. She came with a baby this time. The Rebbe put the $8 in the baby's little hands and the baby's clothing. He stuffed $8. And said, "Then if you don't want to operate, then you don't have to operate." But the Rebbe said, in court, this is what the Rebbe said, but in court, you should say that they should have a separate investigation. She said, "What?" And then they took her away. That was, listen to this. So the doctors wanted to operate. She said, "I'm not operating." So what happened was, is they filed a lawsuit against her from the hospital, the doctors from the hospital, that she's crazy. She said, I went to the Rebbe, and they said, "She's crazy. She's not taking care of her kid." And we, the doctors, they brought it to court, and the court did everything right away because the baby was very sick. So she came to court, and she said in the court, she didn't get any lawyers, she just said, I demand that there be a separate investigation, not from the doctors of the hospital, because they already have like this. But the Rebbe told her to say, even though she didn't know what the Rebbe was talking about when he said that. Listen to this, my son. So then she goes, so the judge was very impressed by that she said this. And then they ran an outside investigation into the whole matter, and it was on the eighth day. It was on the eighth day after she came to the Rebbe that time that they came to the conclusion. They did all different kinds of tests, that there were mistakes that were made with the original tests, and what the baby had was not that growth at all. It was not that it was some kind of a cyst, and that they were able to take care of it without any operation at all. It's all nice. Yeah, and this woman was writing about this thing. The baby's name was Shirley. This is, you know, this woman from South America that she was writing about it. The first thing is when she came into the Rebbe, she said she speaks fluent English. She was in America for like 30 years. She speaks fluent English. And when she walked into the Rebbe, Rebbe started talking to her in Spanish. Spoke to her in Spanish. She never was there before. I don't know why I said it. I don't know why I told you this maisa. When I was thinking about it, but why I felt I wanted to tell this to you, I already forgot a long time ago. But
tzaddik feeling
the pain. Oh, the tzaddik right there. That tzaddik feels when you know when he met her. So the tzaddik feels when there's a Jew who's sick, and the tzaddik. So we don't even sense that. We have a hard time handling when we hear about people and we're told about their sicknesses. The tzaddikim feel the sicknesses even if people don't know that they're sick. Can you imagine? The pain. And that's the physical pain. And like you were saying before, Moshe, is also true. How the tzaddikim feel the pain of Jews who are not living as Jews in such a way, much more than we would feel any pain of a Jew who, God forbid, has the worst disease, Hashem Yirachem. That's how the tzaddik feels the pain of a Jew who's not keeping Shabbos. Not like when we say, you know, my cousin or my aunt, like I was saying, is not religious. Right? Tzaddik, that's the most painful thing in the world. The neshama of a tzaddik is attached in such a deep level to every Jew, in the neshama klolos. But people like us, we have these karkas, we have a defense mechanism that shuts us off because we don't have such developed kalim to be able to deal with extreme pain. It would prevent us from being able to function. We wouldn't be able to function. We would just stay in bed. So in order for us to be able to function, we're able to shut down. The tzaddik is able to function, and that's why we saw tzaddikim. Like by the Pizetz, another tzaddikim, that on Shabbos, when they found out that the child died, it was on Shabbos, and the rest of Shabbos was just singing and dancing and simcha. And then by Havdalah, then by Havdalah, Shabbos is over, and then the crying. But we don't know what that means. We just do stuff when we feel like it. You feel like crying, you cry. You feel happy, you laugh. We don't know what that means, that tzaddik has such a thing. When it's Shabbos, not that you don't cry, when it's Shabbos you're not sad. To say you don't cry, that's a madrega too. No, but on Shabbos, the tzaddik's not sad. Because it's Shabbos. We don't know what that means, b'chlal. To have such control. So for people like us, we have to shut down. We just do that. The system's shut down, so we should be able to go right there, else we would never get up. The tzaddik feels it in the deepest way and still gets up and still does what he has to do. From moment to moment he puts on one garment and takes off another garment. That's the meaning of it. Alright, we got a little bit away from it. We'll come back and Mr. Shem will continue next Monday.